and a great deal more. That's Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at New Roads School. Visit writersblockpresents.com.
I'm Marlena Bond.
And I'm Terry Guy.
With the community calendar at listener-sponsored KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM, online at kpfk.org.
Inner Vision, providing cutting-edge information on wellness, self-help, and empowerment, featuring experts and authors expounding on life's challenges. Here's your host, psychotherapist Dr. Nita Valens.
What is a quiet mind and why is it important? Are a quiet mind and an enlightened state the same thing? Welcome to Inner Vision. I'm your host, Nita Valens, and this is where we talk about health, psychology, spirituality, and your well-being. For the last 25 years, my guest has been coaching thousands of people to achieve happiness and success in life. His books, audios, and seminars utilize his street-tested methodology called the Rapid Enlightenment Process. And his brand new book is Quiet Mind, Epic Life. Welcome, Matthew Ferry, back to Inner Vision.
Yay, I'm glad to be here again. I love this show.
And the show loves you back. And one of the things that you talk about a lot is quiet your mind so you can create an epic life. You say that over and over again. So what is a quiet mind and why do we need one?
Nita, when you have a quiet mind, you're in the present moment. And you're free from stress and worry and concern. And according to the American Institute of Stress, 73% of Americans say they're dealing with psychological stress on a regular basis. And that's bad news, because when you are stressed out, you're not really making good decisions. You don't see things clearly. You're not easy to be around. You're probably less effective with your kids or your spouse or at work, whatever. Your energy gets zapped. And if you're going to live an epic life, if you're going to live a life that is filled with prosperity, well, you want to take the best version of yourself to influence your life. And the good news is a quiet mind brings out the best version of yourself, and it's a skill that anybody can develop.
Well, when you say anyone can develop that skill, do we have to get rid of all stress first, or can we just develop the skill?
Yeah, it's the other way around. So the stress is the effect of the skill of quieting your mind. And most of us have been taught through Eastern methods that we need to meditate and we need to use mindfulness and all of that. And you've known me for a long time. I'm like the Enlightenment crash test dummy. I've done everything under the sun
to try and figure out
how do I get my mind to stop bugging me. And there was a time when I probably had a good 40-50% of the time my mind was pretty quiet, but I would get waylaid. And next thing you know, I'm embarrassed because I'm supposed to be happy and positive, and here I was, angry or upset or stressed or freaked out. And I had to figure out a different way to do it. And so ultimately, the Rapid Enlightenment Process came about trying to figure out, how do I get my mind to not freak out at Thanksgiving? How do I get my mind to not go into stress when I'm in traffic or when I'm running late or? So the game here is not necessarily meditation, even though I love meditation. It's actually removing the motivation for you to think the survival-based thoughts that create stress.
Oh, well, let's talk about those thoughts. What are those thoughts?
Am I going to have enough money to retire?
Uh-huh. That's a big one.
What is going on in the political world today? Is the president going to ruin the country? Are my children going to be okay? Will they get to go to college? Am I going to be debilitated by my health in my old age? Am I going to get Alzheimer's? Am I going to have a heart attack? These bills are piling up. These are incredibly common thought forms that all of us have. And until you're able to see the mind for what it is, these kinds of thoughts become stressful and debilitating rather than engaging and creative.
So if you have a thought like, everything you just said are very common concerns with most people, unless you were born like a Rockefeller. What do we do to have the concerns and prepare for the future, but not have those thoughts completely debilitate us as we're trying to go day to day, do our lives, go to work, raise our kids, etc.?
Let's talk about the rapid enlightenment process.
Let's.
There's four components to it. And when you implement these four components, the mind goes quiet, which doesn't mean you don't have thoughts. It means that the thought quality changes. You go from a unwanted, unrequested, ranting, raving, debilitating, you know, ruminating on a thought over and over and over, flashes of negativity. So you go from those unwanted thoughts into a more creative, dare I say, optimistic point of view. And the way that you do that is four steps. One is recognizing that there is a machine in your head that is reacting. And I call it the drunk monkey. And it has what I call unconscious reflexes. And if you don't know what the unconscious reflexes are, and you're not able to see them operating, you'll be whisked away by these unconscious reflexes and stuck in a survival mode. So you want to think about it in this way. That drunk monkey in our head is like a GPS, and it's programmed for survival. And it's programmed by all of your ancestors and all of humanity and everything that we came in with. And it's always moving towards survival. But Nita, today, we're not in a survival situation.
No, we're not.
We're actually in a thriving situation. The things that we're concerned with are not survival-based thoughts. Your listeners are not in a survival situation. They're in a thriving situation. So they know to go straight towards that kind thing. But the drunk monkey in their head says, nope, make a left turn. You should be suspicious. So they've got programmed responses, which I call unconscious reflexes. So one, you have to see what those are. That's number one. Number two, you have to begin to heal the underlying imbalance that's in our consciousness. And this is something that is very unique to my methodology. They're called the hidden motives to survive.
Mm.
And the only thing that I can do is describe them as the code that creates thoughts. Let's pretend that our thinking is a computer program.
Okay.
And there's an underlying code. That code that creates the thoughts are these long-standing, effective ways of seeing the world. Greed, grudge, hatred, victim, illogical rules, being humble, traitor, lazy, resistance, hatred, grudge. If you can't see those influencing your thinking and then do the work to heal them through awareness, then they keep influencing you.
Okay, so I have all these things that are influencing me, but if I am not aware of it, like this is sort of like we've talked about this before, we're trying to take the unconscious and make it conscious, because it's not like a minute ago when you said, okay, go straight ahead, that's where you're going to thrive, and then suddenly, no, turn left, don't trust that, turn left instead, turn right instead, whatever. So how do we bring that forth into consciousness, all of those elements?
Well, there's many components and many ways. So one of the things that I have dedicated myself to is making sure that I am serving as many people as possible in this process. So one of the things that I do every day is I put out a video, the Daily Enlightenment, or a podcast, and every day I'm talking about one of these kinds of things to bring it into awareness. Let's spend, you know, 3, 4, 8 minutes talking about it. Another thing that people can do is they can go to my website and download the Hidden Motive Healing Meditations as my gift. So they just go to MatthewFerry.com/motives. They can download the Healing Meditations and spend 5 minutes working on or working through this imbalance in their consciousness. But it really comes down to structure. I mean, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people go to church, or why do they join a book club, or why do they get into a mastermind group? Because they're trying to create a structure that reminds them of what they're committed to, and to develop a quiet mind and then as a consequence an epic life, you got to create structure.
Boy, that's really the truth, isn't it? That is amazing. With me today is Matthew Ferry. He is a big voice in the human potential movement and directly helping us to reach our potential and the rapid enlightenment process. I'm so glad you finally have a name via which we can conquer the drunk monkey, because you've been talking about the drunk monkey for many, many years. So I love this new work that you're doing. It's kind of not even really new, but the way the nomenclature and all the elements about it that are pretty simple and easy to understand and how to really move through changing our consciousness, it's amazing. I'm very excited to have you with us today. And so this piece that you were saying just a moment ago about needing structure, there's an interesting thing I've noticed with many people that, and of course I'm a psychotherapist, so I see kind of a skewed population perhaps, but many people rebel against structure because we think, well, I don't need to do it this way. I don't need that structure. I want to be free. But what is freedom really? Isn't freedom more like the discipline and the rewards that we reap out of really putting a structure or a routine together in most areas?
If you look at someone who is really good at something, you might say, gosh, they have so much freedom. Look at that dancer on stage, the freedom that they're displaying in their movements. Look at that golfer, how free they are to move that ball anywhere on the terrain. That freedom came along with tens of thousands of hours of structured process. And the freedom that we desire, so let's just think about it like this. The people who are interested in this kind of conversation, they're just predisposed to growth and taking on new things and going to the next level. And you know, what else can I do to experience happiness and peace and more joy? And for that particular person, we have spent our entire lives in a societal structure that really doesn't have any interest in that. All the structure that we have been exposed to has been about survival. And we, me, you, our listener, we have this desire for thriving. So we have to throw all of our ideas about structure out and begin to implement structures, which is nothing more than system, procedure, process, workflow, accountability, monitoring, something that happens repetitiously, skill development. We have to throw everything out in regards to survival and start focusing our structures on thriving.
I love how you reframed that. Focusing our structures on thriving. I love that. Amazing. So can you create an example of how that would work with somebody? Perhaps someone you've worked with?
Yeah, no problem. Of course. There are many, many things. So one of the things that I am a huge fan of is lowering the bar. And what I've found is that for people like us who are a little more pleasure-oriented, we want more joy, we want more peace and love and kindness in our life.
And chocolate.
Say it again, and chocolate, yes. For sure, more chocolate. For people like us, using the old techniques of motivation don't work. In fact, using motivation for people like us typically backfires, and we rebel against it.
That's so true.
And what I have learned, just at least about myself and working with thousands of people out there who want to make these kinds of changes, if you lower the bar so low that it becomes impossible not to do, and then you track what you're doing, you can actually start to gain a momentum. So, for example, with me, there was a time when I was working with my mentor, Stephen Sadler, and I think I introduced you to him, you know, many moons ago, or maybe you introduced him to me. I don't remember.
Yeah, yes, of course.
I remember Stephen saying, you need to meditate every single day, and I'd be like,
that's right, I remember that.
Every single day. And so ultimately, I figured out, I was relating to this process like motivation, like I had to. And I knew that I appreciated it when I did it, but I also knew that the drunk monkey in my head was resisting. So I lowered the bar all the way down to taking 3 long, slow, deep breaths with my eyes closed, which took about a minute. And as long as I did that, my meditation counted. And I had a goal to do that for 365 days in a row. And by the time I got to 365 days, I was actually doing meditations that were 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. I kept going. In fact, I think I meditated over 700 days in a row. And by the time I was declaring myself complete with the project, as long as I did 1 minute, I was complete. But there were times when I was meditating for 4 hours because it felt so good.
Oh, wow.
No kidding. Crazy. And that's a structure. And all I did was I simply told people what I was committed to. I used the community. I let them know that I was really, really bad at keeping my word in this area of meditating, and that I was going to lower the bar and get it all the way down, and if I skipped a day, I would start over. And I just started reporting to a couple of friends who, you know, they didn't really care, but I was trying to keep my word and be a man of integrity. And in this area, it was not easy.
So this is very cool what you did, because you lowered the bar, you set up accountability partners, the friends that you would call or text and say what had happened.
1 minute done.
1 minute done, and then you just built on it and built on it and built on it.
And I use a cool app, too, called Streaks. And so that's a highly recommended app, the Streaks app, because then you can track every single day what you're doing.
That's very interesting, a tracking app.
Mm-hmm. Another place that I lowered the bar was in yoga. I wanted to do yoga every day. And so I just kept not doing it because it was too much. And ultimately, I lowered my yoga all the way down to 8 minutes a day. All I had to do was listen to my favorite Diva Pramal song. And that song was 8 minutes long. And as long as I laid there on my back in Shavasana for 8 minutes, it counted. But the thing is, Nita, I lowered the bar so low that I would be laying there, and I'm like, I could do a boat. Next thing I'm doing boat. Well, you know, I could do a side plank. And then I'm, you know, and every single day, to this day, I'm still doing it. But every single time now, I do more than 8 minutes. And every single time, I'm doing all kinds of different moves. But all I have to do, the only thing I have to do is lay there for 8 minutes. And as long as I lay there for 8 minutes, I get to check it off and report to my friends that I did it.
So you set...
Lower the bar.
You lowered the bar. You set a very realistic goal. And you reported in. And then how'd that make you feel about yourself?
It's incredibly satisfying because now you get momentum going. And what happens is it doesn't put you into a survival state. So that's the big thing that my methodology is about, is how do we operate in life unburdened by the illogical framework of the survival mind? And how do we ascend into the enlightened mind? And the enlightened mind is so easy to know when it's present because it has one mode, and that is that all is well. And anything less than all is well is not enlightened.
Now, is all is well the truth, no matter what is going on? There's an earthquake, there's a flood, there's people missing or getting hurt or anything like that, but still all is well? Is that still applicable?
100%, and here's why. Everything you just described are survival situations. So in a survival situation, I am 100% going to rely on my survival mind to help me manage those situations. And I'm so grateful for the tens of thousands of human beings that came before me who learned and learned and learned and genetically programmed into my consciousness that I should be alert for survival situations and know how to behave appropriately. I am so grateful. The only problem is maybe one or two times the average person is going to have an actual survival situation in their life. But literally thousands of times a week, they are burdened by the inappropriate survival response in a non-survival situation.
Because of what we're telling ourselves in our mind, it sounds like.
Our mind is designed to respond in a survival threat way. And that survival threat way could also be gathering, right? So it could be like, I need to get this stuff, greed. I need to make sure that I am liked, pride. I may need to make sure I have good standing in the environment, pride. So I need to not offend the stronger people in my environment. I don't want to be in conflict, humble.
Okay.
So while humble sounds lovely, right, for us, we were trained by our spiritual masters of the past, and they've told us to be humble. And let's be honest, if you're an arrogant survival monkey, then yes, being humble is phenomenal.
Right.
But for people like us, being humble actually debilitates us. It puts us into an illogical framework that we're less than others.
Oh.
When you're less than others, you're not going to operate very effectively.
Yeah, and you won't feel good about yourself. Oh, that's amazing. With me today here on Inner Vision is Matthew Ferry. So this is really amazing work that you're doing. So we start to talk about your process. So the first aspect is recognize there's a machine in your head with unconscious reflexes. The next was talking about the hidden motives to survive, sort of how to heal the underneath aspects of that. So what's the third piece?
The third component is about connecting with enlightened perspectives. And we're literally going to pierce through the denial mechanism. And what I found is that a mentor of mine, Dr. David Hawkins, he wrote this book called Power versus Force. This mentor taught me this incredible tool called muscle testing, more formally called applied kinesiology. And for years, I utilized his technique of measuring consciousness, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Oh, I did too. I interviewed him. Yes, of course.
So I thought that was the coolest thing ever, to be able to test what something's level of consciousness was to determine if that was appropriate for me to study or expose myself to, whatever. But ultimately, I had to stand on my mentor's shoulders. And what I started to realize is that it's not about true or false. It muscle testing, right? So you push on somebody's arm, you make a statement, and sometimes you make a statement and you push on their arm and their arm goes down. And what I found is that there are universal statements that if you make these statements and you push on somebody's arm, their arm will not be able to maintain strength. And conversely, universal statements that if you press on their arm after you make the statement, their arm is strengthened. And what I had to sort of make peace with is that the things that I was interested in ultimately lived in the realm of dogma. Where do you go after you die? What happens when you die? Is God real? Are you going to be punished by God? If you say negative things, is God going to somehow come down and make your life bad? If you focus on bad things, will the law of attraction come and boomerang those bad things back to you? I have always been intrigued by dogma, which is essentially unprovable statements that you believe anyway. And those unprovable statements have an incredible effect on your life because they affect your contextual framework.
Of course.
So in the third component, which is a more advanced part of the Rapid Enlightenment process, I walk people through 35 different statements that go strong and weak on them, and what we discover is that a statement that essentially assumes that all is well will strengthen the body and fortify your system, and a statement that assumes that something is wrong will weaken the body and therefore degrade your ability. And I've found over the years that they correspond, and I call those strengthening statements enlightened perspectives. And I call the weakening statements survival perspectives.
Got it.
So the third component to get your mind to go quiet is that you actually have to practice adopting enlightened perspectives, which, Nita, if we're just being honest, these are unprovable statements. No one can prove them. And if you believe them, you are strengthened by them. And there are other unprovable statements that if you believe them, your body will fail and you will malfunction.
So all is well is an example of an enlightening perspective, right?
You bet.
Okay. How about, let's talk about energy a little bit. How about just the statement, there is energy all around us. We can't touch it. We can't see it, but we can sort of sense it, right?
It's a strengthening statement, but there's something deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's call that phase one. There's energy all around us. A more strengthening statement, so let's just take it like frameworks.
Okay.
Even more strengthening is all there is energy, that we are all one thing expressing itself with infinite variety. And the only thing that distinguishes something is your perceptual filters. Therefore, you are not different than any other thing that you are sensing. You are the same things that you are sensing. When you begin to relate to life in that way, suddenly it's like this. All is well.
You know,
I
felt
where it goes. Nothing to do.
And you know, when you said that, I felt like a breath of fresh air washed over me when you said all there is energy. I just felt like, oh, everything's going to be okay now.
Exactly. Here is an interesting, I just opened my book to read you some statements. So this statement goes strong, and I don't know why. And the first time that it went strong for me, I just, my jaw dropped. And that is that every human being interested in creating a quiet mind has incarnated as a human being many times. That is a strengthening statement, and I don't know why. I was raised Christian. So my framework, in other words, I'll say it in this way, my unprovable faith-based dogma was that when you're dead, then you go into some judgment process, and then you either spend eternity in a happy place or spend eternity in a negative place. It's binary, and so you better get it right.
It's either or.
It's either or, and when you muscle test that framework, it actually causes your body to fail, which doesn't mean that it's true or false. Truth and falsehood are contextual.
Yes.
But what I have found is it's a best practice to do things that make you strong.
Well, yes, that makes total sense. Absolutely.
It's a best practice. Like if you and I, we know, right? If you were working with a client and you said to that client, I want you every single day to look in the mirror and say, I hate you. You and I both know it's conclusive that if you did that, it would slowly but surely degrade you and debilitate you.
Yes, it would.
And conversely, the other direction would uplift you. If you were looking in the mirror and saying, I love you, that would have a positive effect. If we did that to a child, if we said every day, I hate you to that child, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it would influence the child into degrading behaviors. And conversely, if we said, I love you to that child, we know that it would have a more uplifting effect. It's not like binary, right? Each of us has our own constitution. But we know that love is strengthening and hate is weakening. And it turns out that using muscle testing, that corresponds.
Well, that's pretty amazing. And
trippy, right?
And it's funny you pulled that as an example because I do have a mirror in the office and I do have clients do that. That I have
that's
them
right.
Look in the mirror. And
good thing to do.
And if they say, I can't look in the mirror and say I love myself, I can't do it. Say, okay, well, then just look in the mirror. Don't say anything. We'll just start in stages. We'll take this incrementally. First, just look in the mirror and tell me what do you see. You got to start somewhere, right?
That is a great place to start, just being with yourself.
Exactly. Look in your right eye, look in your left eye. And, you know, this is like, there used to be this old saying, I don't even know where I heard this, God or energy does not create junk. Like, we're not junk. We're human beings.
Junk is just a perspective.
That's right. It's the story. It's an idea, and it's not a very positive one, so why think of it that way?
It's one that if we use muscle testing, so this is what happens when people come to my events. So you've seen me experimenting with muscle testing. You know, you and I have known each other for, I don't know, 15
years. Yeah, about 15, 17 years, yes.
Something like that. And so I've been experimenting with muscle testing since 1999, and it took a long time for me to develop a framework that was pragmatic enough for me to be able to use it on Wall Street. And Wall Street is a very interesting place, because on Wall Street, the level of rational thinking and pragmatism that they're trained in is extreme. And to be able to utilize the muscle testing framework on billionaires on Wall Street has taken a tremendous amount of work on my part. But why I bring that up is that it's so logical and so rational that people whose jobs are extreme logic and rationale are able to accept the muscle testing framework when it's presented inside of the rapid enlightenment process. And I will tell you that operating in an enlightened framework, when you are trading and trying to figure out how to make money, it's extremely effective.
That's amazing. With me today is Matthew Ferry. He has written a brand new book, and in the book is The Way to Do the Rapid Enlightenment Process, and we are learning all about that today. And the book is called Quiet Mind, Epic Life. Where can people find the book?
If they go to Amazon, they can buy it full price. If they go to my site, which is just quietmindepiclife.com, I will send it to them as my gift, as long as they just pay the shipping.
Well, that's completely awesome.
Yeah, I think so.
I definitely think so. So we are at step three of the process, of the rapid enlightenment process, of the four-step process, connecting with enlightening perspectives. Did you want to say anything more about that, or did you want to go on to step four?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I could say a ton, but no, I think we should go to step four because it's so fun.
Okay, I'm in.
Recontextualization is step four, and this is a word that I learned from my mentor, Dr. Hawkins. And recontextualization, in my world, it's the skill of describing the conditions and the circumstances in a way that creates an empowering reality for you. So as you adopt strengthening statements and you start to reject weakening statements, you actually start to learn a completely different language. And that language creates this upward mobility in your life, where all of a sudden things become more effortless and enjoyable. But the way that you describe things is typically because you learn these language patterns from your parents, your environment, your school, etc. And it does take a little practice to begin to describe things in a way that is either neutral or contains within it resourcefulness or creativity or optimism. Most of the time that we describe things, we accidentally or out of habit, we describe things in a way that turn us into a victim, or they put us in a position of anger or hate or upset towards other people, and we don't even notice. It's just this tiny little piece of information in there. It's like this. It's like, I mean, I forgive my mom. She doesn't have any clue why she is this way, but I forgive her. So that's like the enlightened arrogance. Those are my clients, by the way. My clients are they're already way along the path, you know what I'm saying? My clients are already, they're like you and I. They've done everything under the sun, and now we're working on those little shades of gray in their recontextualization. It's important when we're recontextualizing to take on language patterns that contain the presupposition that all is well. Because in the end, enlightenment is just the recognition that the source of life for you is the source of life for everyone and everything, that we're all one thing expressing itself with infinite variety. And if we're all one thing, Nita, then the only thing that makes something bad or wrong or no good is our preferences. But our preferences, we're not the rulers of the universe.
True.
What I want is not what you want. And me learning to honor what you want and to acknowledge that what I want is different and what I believe is different, but that doesn't make it better or worse, for me to operate in that framework just makes my life easier. And the truth is, as a human being, that's really what we want. We don't want to be stressed out. We don't want to be against. We don't want to be in a fight. We want to feel good and be empowered. And our language has a lot to do with it.
The language that we speak and the stories that we create in our minds about things that are going on or about ourselves can make or break us.
Big time. And here's the thing that I'm going to say. This is the discovery to me that changed the trajectory of my work. And that is that we actually come in predisposed to certain ways of thinking and seeing the world. So, for example, if I look at my brothers and sisters, every one of us thinks about the world in a totally different way. If I look at my friends and clients' families, I see one of the siblings is a pessimist and a devout Christian. The other one is an optimist and a personal development, you know, fruitcake, right? I mean, they're like, they came out of the same environment, but they're totally different. And utilizing the Rapid Enlightenment framework, we begin to see that we are predisposed to context and perspective. And when you can identify, when you have the consciousness, the presence of thinking, to be able to identify what you're predisposed to, you can then begin to recontextualize it. Ultimately, your job, my job, if we're committed to being completely at peace with everything that is happening in life, our job is to question the underlying framework of our thinking. As soon as we question it, wow, suddenly we're off to the races with peace.
So the things that we give meaning to, and then we accept that as sort of a fact, but it's not really a fact because that thing I give meaning to might mean nothing to you. So if I say, well, this is meaningful, and you say, oh, really interesting, I'm not resonating with that, then I might be thinking, oh, I wonder if I'm ascribing meaning to this that's just in my head and it's really just what it is. So in our conversations with each other, then we can challenge our old ideas. But if we're left to our own devices and just accept all our thoughts, that's kind of how we go down the rabbit hole. It's through relating with each other that we can challenge each other and move through these old ideas, so to speak.
I think you're describing the next evolution of human being. And I suspect that the human beings that tune in to the Inner Visions show are the next evolution. They are people who are naturally questioning everything. They are people who are standing on the shoulders of all of our ancestors who've created this very safe environment for us, and they're no longer obsessed with optimizing the outer world. The outer world is very optimized already. Instead, they are predisposed to optimizing the inner world. How do I be in my environment, whatever that might be, and be at peace? Feel joy, feel satisfied, be uplifted. People who are naturally questioning each other, like you and I, we would just naturally question each other. Now, we have to be aware of that not everybody is necessarily predisposed to that vein of evolution that is occurring right now.
That's true. And also the challenge might be if you're not in a pleasing environment or the perfect quiet meditative environment, let's say you live on a busy street and you have stress, et cetera, then maybe what happens is we have to create the process anyway. We have to go forward with our enlightenment process regardless of the environment we're in. We just have to keep doing what is in front of us.
Your environment is influential, but it is not the most influential component of your experience. The most influential component of your experience is the context that you're holding in your mind. here's an example that I use. Let's say you and I, you invite me to a party, and I get there early, and I'm looking around, and I am like, what the heck is going on here, Nita? Where did you invite me? It's as if it's all gangsters at the party.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit concerned. I put my jacket down. I turn around to get a drink, and when I turn back, my jacket's gone. Now I'm like, oh, my God, I'm with all gangsters. What am I going to do? I'm freaking out. I'm looking around. I don't want to be too conspicuous. My heart rate is going up. Finally, I'm a little too freaked out, so I go outside, and I call you. Nita, where are you? And you're like, what's up? I'm on my way. I'm like, I'm here at this party, and it's all gangsters, and my jacket is gone, and this is my $250 leather jacket, and I think somebody stole it. And you burst into laughter. What? Why are you laughing? Matthew, I forgot to tell you. This is my friend Bob. Bob works at the police department, and every year they have a gangster party. And I totally spaced. I forgot to tell you that every single person here is somehow connected to the police department. I promise you, your jacket is fine. They probably just put it somewhere so that it would be safe.
Oh, that
now
is hilarious.
Now I walk back into the party. What am I experiencing?
Something completely different.
It's the exact same party, but the context shifted.
Yes.
So while our environment, maybe I live on a busy street, maybe my parents are angry people fighting all the time, maybe I am with a spouse who has postpartum depression and she's just upset nonstop, maybe I have 3 kids and I had no idea that being married was such a hard thing to do with kids and that I was going to be deep in debt and underwater. Maybe all of those things are happening.
Maybe.
But with a shift in your context, you can actually put yourself into a state of peace. Recontextualization. For example, if you just said, I'm going to practice total and complete acceptance of all people in all situations at all times, including myself. And I'm going to see what happens if I practice accepting the situation as it is. You'll find that you just go, ah, if you stop holding people accountable to agreements that they didn't make.
Yeah, my ideas that they know nothing about.
Exactly right. If you just do that, if you say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play around with being unoffendable. I wonder what would happen if for one day I would practice being unoffendable. Or what if everything that I experience is chaotic, I'm going to actually intentionally find a way to make it the right situation, to embrace it, to understand it, to appreciate it, to marvel at the perfection of it. These are just simple little contextual shifts. Need all I'm doing is I'm reading out of the daily practices in the back of my book. These are. I give people 23 daily practices that they could take on so that they could achieve their quiet mind faster.
Mmm, I like that. Tell us another one.
Yeah, be kind to people even when they don't operate the way that you think they should. Really, really valuable. And then what I do is I give you some enlightened perspectives to think about. So in that one, for example, here are the enlightened perspectives. The world is perfect exactly as it is. That strengthens you. The only thing that makes it imperfect is my perspective about it. That also strengthens you. The people in my life are perfect exactly as they are. The only thing that makes them imperfect is my perspective about them.
Or my expectations?
I am not the ruler of the universe.
That's a good one.
We sure think we are, don't we? We walk around like, well, they should do this, and that guy should be that, and why are they not doing this, and blah, blah, blah. That's just a drunk monkey.
There was a conversation we had a long, long time ago where we were talking about expectations. So if someone doesn't meet my expectations, and perhaps they don't even know what my expectations are, perhaps I should drop all that and just give them an A-plus for being who they are and not have any ideas whatsoever about who they are one way or another and just give them an A-plus and just be kind, be as sincere as possible, and just accept each moment as it is. It's a great stress reliever, actually.
You just described what happens naturally when your mind goes completely quiet. That's what happens. You become that person automatically. And Nita, I mean, we have been studying and learning and trying to figure out and going down every avenue, every lane, exploring every part of the map that we possibly can to get to that place of profound peace where we're just naturally being kind and being open and being optimistic and giving people the benefit of the doubt. And I don't know about you, but no matter what I did, there'd be certain people that I would meet, all that would go right out the window.
Yes.
There'd be certain situations I would be in, and suddenly I am like a covert spy. I'm sniffing out all the bad people, right? And I'm like, what is happening to me here? Yeah, I am a kind, gentle, courteous person. And next, I'm literally being waylaid by the drunk monkey in my head. And so for me, it led me down this path of trying to understand what is my mind's motivation for thinking. And once I was able to discern what the motivations were, then how do I remove this motivation? What's the context? That if this context was present, I wouldn't be suspicious. If this context wasn't present, I wouldn't need to prove to this person that I'm better than them. I wouldn't be in the meeting thinking, do they know who I am? Do they understand what I've done? Instead, I would just be present, and I would be appreciative and kind and wanting to know. It literally takes removing the motivation and then creating a new context. And as soon as you do that, you become the person that you just described. No ashram necessary. No meditation necessary.
Just be without judgment. Be still. Be present. Be curious about what's going to happen and be interested. And I might learn something or not.
You'll be in awe, I promise. Most of the time, you will be in awe. You will be with people who in the past you resisted. And in the present moment, you are awe-inspired by what this background field of energy and information that is creating all things has created in this particular person and in you and in the experience that you're having.
With me today is Matthew Ferry, and he has written a brand new book, which I am very excited about, Quiet Mind, Epic Life. Do you think, Matthew, that sometimes when you were saying a minute ago, you walk into a situation, you're centered, you have good intentions, everything flies out the window, and here comes all these behaviors I don't want to be in, like judging and fear and all this stuff. When someone has had early childhood traumas, and those traumas perhaps can be triggered, perhaps not completely worked through, do you think that's part of how we just get, like, thrown off our center sometimes because something reminds us of something unconsciously, usually, and then there we are back in old ideas, old behaviors, old thoughts, old ways, and we're like, gee, what the heck just happened here?
It certainly happened to me. I know it's happened to you.
Totally.
And for me, what I did is I went on an investigation. So I'm probably a little weirder than most people in terms of my, just noodling, trying to figure things out. And my noodling and trying to figure things out has always been about myself, my experience, my psychology. I remember at 9 years old leaving my body and having these profound experiences and wondering, my God, how do I get back there again? How do I get to that bliss? And it's driven me, Nita. And what I have found is that a person who listens to your show is predisposed to the enlightened state, which that's a pretty bold statement to make, but I promise you, you spend some time with me, we will discover that that seed is inside of you. That seed has been spreading through the millennia, and it is now here starting to blossom on the planet. And what I have found is that these old experiences that we have, they don't make us who they are. They shaped what was already inside of us. So two people could have the exact same experience, one deeply traumatized by it, the other one, whatever, no experience. It's like, okay, well, that happened, no big deal. So depending on the predisposition of the person, there's going to be a different result. Their experience will be shaped in a different way based on their own filters. In the rapid enlightenment process, we go and we find those filters. And it turns out that those filters are created by the hidden motives to survive, which are nothing more than very successful survival programs in your consciousness. Greed, think about a squirrel. They have greed built into them, so this is not a human thing. Grudges, think about how animals generally react to human beings. It's like, cautious, stay away from that thing. The same thing for human beings. We have grudges. We have hatred. And hatred, people think of that, I don't hate people. Yes, I understand that. But if I give you a thing of peanut butter, you'll go, I don't like peanut butter. That's hatred. It's much more subtle than you think. We follow illogical rules. I would say one of the things that causes people to be shaped deeply are these illogical rules that are inside of their consciousness, and they can't seem to get around them. Put your children's needs above your own. It's a nice idea if you want to live a miserable life. Family first. Family is the most important thing. Yeah, that's great if you're living on a farm and you have no access to resources. But that's not us. A woman's job is to raise children. What? No. You have to look your best for company. Never leave your spouse. It's better to look good than be happy. Keep your business private. These are all illogical rules that we are literally born with, and then they become shaped depending on the people that we hang around and who we're raised by and the geography and. But they're built into our consciousness.
They sure are. So we have to get, the irony is they're there, but sometimes we don't know, so we have to get more conscious to be aware that they're there unconsciously.
Correct. Yep, correct. And I suspect that the person who is into your show is a person who is a natural driver towards being more conscious. That's sort of their predisposition. It's like, I don't know why, I just like doing this stuff.
Well, we want to learn more. We're interested. Yeah. We're curious. And this is who you are. This is who I am. So we're going to attract that in. Even if people are scared at first or trepidatious or have fear, they are coming in and tuning in anyway because the curiosity and the interest and the desire. A long time ago, you did a seminar and you talked a lot about desire. And that's a real important element here because it's our desire that will get us going. Because we can have peace and be happy with everything and be like just as if we're in the ashram. But then we'll look over and we'll say, oh, what's that over there? What's that bed of flowers? And look at those pretty colors. And I wonder if I could grow those flowers. And I wonder how you plant them. And maybe I should take a class or should I go to the nursery? I'm so interested in that all of a sudden. So there's always this thing of desire. It doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing or a good thing. It's just curiosity, wanting to bring something else into your life.
The universe is a both creative, so it's self-organizing into new variations on the themes, and it is predominantly destructive. And it turns out that the destructive parts are as important as the creative parts, and that it is the dance between the two that has things turn out. And for a human being, our consciousness has us think that our desires are something that we have or that we created. But when you step back, when you're in the present moment, you begin to see that desire is an aspect of the universe and that aspect is what you are. So the things that you want aren't actually things that you want. They are the things that you are. And you are this creative force that is organizing all this stuff around you. Why do you have a car? Because there was something inside of you that said, I'm going to go faster. I'm going to get farther. I'm going to go be able to take advantage of more of the planet if I can access that technology.
I'm going to see more. I'm going to do more.
That's right. I'm going to go and experience. And a car is an experience-creating machine that we've created, and we acknowledge the outer optimizing, the environmental optimizing parts of the species that makes cool stuff like that. And for us, we're probably more predisposed to, I'm going to use that car to have an incredible experience. We're more experience-oriented, inner optimizing. And the crazy thing is, all of these desires are just the universe. They're just the background field of energy and information, self-organizing into stuff. And that's what you are, and that's what your ideas are. So there's no need to worry about if your ideas are going to come about. If you are inspired and you want to do something about it, then it'll just start happening.
Yes, it will. Well, Matthew Ferry, we did the whole rapid enlightenment process today, and your new book, which I can't wait to get a hold of, Quiet Mind, Epic Life. And where can people find the book and find you?
If they go to quietmindepiclife.com, I will actually send them a copy of the book as my gift. They just pay the shipping, and I will package it up in my garage, literally, at this time, and send it off to them.
Again, I want to thank our guest today, Matthew Ferry. And remember, I'm your resource. Give me a call at 818-783-6258 with any questions or concerns. We had Mark Maxwell in production today. Ricky is in master control. And we have our fabulous producer returning to be with us, Jasmine. Thank you. Thank you. And remember, we're streaming live on the web at kpfk.org worldwide. If you miss a program, go to the audio archives link to catch up. Everything is up there for free for 90 days. The quote I leave you with today is by William James when he said, "The greatest weapon against stress is our ability to choose one thought over another." Now remember, starting on April 17th, we will move to Wednesday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. Instead of having lunch with you on Tuesdays, I'll have dinner with you on Wednesdays. I'm Nita Valens. Thanks for listening.
The views and opinions expressed on the program, Inner Vision, make no claim to diagnose, treat, prevent, mitigate, or cure diseases. And the information that is discussed on the program is not to be construed as medical advice. The views and opinion expressed on the program are those of the show host, producers, and/or the persons appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KPFK and Pacifica Radio.
Hi, this is Nita Valens. Surprise! We're moving Inner Vision to Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. We used to do lunch together, and now we'll be together for dinner from 7 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday nights. That's Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. starting on April 17th. See you then.
Dear Sugar, my question
Dear Sugar,
is about
my birth mother doesn't
love.
Want me.
Dear Sugar,
Nia Vardalos reprises the role of Sugar in her stage adaptation of Cheryl Strayed's best-selling book, Tiny Beautiful Things, at the Pasadena Playhouse, April 10th through May 5th. From the director of Hamilton, this New York Times critics pick explores reaching when you're stuck, healing when you're broken, and finding the courage to take on the questions that have no answers. For tickets and more information, visit PasadenaPlayhouse.org or KPFK.org.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Mann, the host of Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. I began with the Congress of Racial Equality, the Newark Community Union Project, the Students for Democratic Society. I work with the Black Panther Party, the Young Lords, SNCC, CORE. I was in a communist organization. I worked in the auto factories. Now I'm director of the Labor Community Strategy Center. I'm very concerned that we're not talking about building a movement, but we have too many critics and not enough organizers. Today, we focus on the work of the Indigenous Environmental Network, Black Lives Matter, and the work of my own organization, the Labor Community Strategy Center. If you want to fight racism, fight imperialism, fight for climate justice and eco-socialism, if you want to make a revolution instead of talking about it, listen to Voices from the Frontlines every Tuesday at 3 to 4 with our producer, Channing Martinez. We need more organizers, not just listener-sponsored radio, but organizer-driven radio. Voices from the Frontlines, check out our website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com. All power to the people. This is Eric Mann. Take good care of yourself.
Hi, I'm Jack Black, and you're listening to KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, online at kpfk.org.
It's extremely important to have public stations like KPFK that are not controlled by corporations and have an independent voice. You feel like you're listening to the voice of reason when you're going through the dial and hearing just a bunch of noise and advertisements, and you find these little oasis of sanity in the midst of all the noise.